For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics. Along with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and sitting in for Ryan Kiesel is Stillwater Democratic Representative Corey Williams. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you for having me.
The State House fails to get enough votes to pass a GOP plan to fix the shortfall in the budget by raising revenue on tobacco products, gasoline, and Low Point beer. The defeat came despite more than 2 hours of questions and debate and more than an hour of the vote staying open so House Speaker Charles McCall could hold an impromptu press conference in the media gallery. Neva, what's the next move for the Republicans?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, obviously, we've seen some action on the Senate side with a resolution on Thursday morning to try to kind of at least get GPT on the table on the House side. I mean, saying that that they see this as a reasonable compromise, and that's something where there's been this sticking point. And I think a lot of senators felt like they were getting beat up, you know, long before they even had an opportunity to have something to vote on. So we'll see if this gets infused into the basic package that went down in defeat by 54-44 on Wednesday, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And we'll know better, I think, hopefully before the dust settles in the weekend.
Representative Williams, have you heard anything about this new plan that the Senate has, whether or not that might be of interest to the Democrats in the House?
I think, quite honestly, the Senate was just tired of being the scapegoat. Speaker McCall on many occasions and said, we can't talk about GPT because the Senate won't even entertain
it. Pass the House.
So I think that was a shot across the bow from the Senate saying, no, we're willing to discuss it. And quite honestly, the Democratic caucus in the House is appreciative of that. They sent over a resolution that would say 4%. There's no months in that. And I think that's where you're going to see the next area of wrangling about, like, okay, how long is this and this lowered gross production tax rate? Because the rate actually is 7% right now, but there's incentive periods at 2%, and then it graduates up.
It's after like 36 months, correct?
Right. And yeah. So, and if you look at the production curves on these wells, you want the gross production tax as high as you can get it in the beginning if you're trying to raise revenue. Now, if you are a shareholder, you want it of an oil and gas company, you want it as low as possible in the beginning. So I think that the House Democratic Caucus is willing to work with the Senate, and we'll be discussing Thursday and probably on into the weekend what that looks like going forward. The last conversation that our caucus had would be we would accept 4%, but at a 12-month interval.
There were amendments yesterday that were actually at 4%. The Democrats had asked, I think Representative Virgin had put forth an amendment that would be at 4%. So do you think we're starting to see some kind of light, you know,
Well, I think what we're starting to see is that it's going to take more of this give and take. I mean, this clear willingness, as the Senate said, to compromise. I mean, to find some way to stop the logjam, to find some way to get everyone to a deal that no one particularly likes, but everyone can at least live with and get the votes to get the job done. So I think we've got this consternation developing in the public mind of nothing is happening. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is a growing sentiment that something has to happen. Now, whether that occurs quickly or whether this drags on indefinitely, I mean, I think that's a big question, because it's going to clearly take Republicans and Democrats in the House to get this deal done. And no one particularly is going to have a lot of enthusiasm, I don't think, for it, at least from what's being said on both sides of the aisle. But bottom line is, I think the public says, get something done and get this thing fixed.
And there was some heartfelt debate. Representative Proctor's, I think, was one of the ones that stuck in my mind from Wednesday's debate about how disappointed he was in the fact there hadn't been any movement in this.
Yeah, you know, one of the frustrating things is in the Democrat caucus, and we really believe the constituents of the state of Oklahoma have been talking about gross production tax for the better part of 8 months. It was part of our original plan released back in March, and we've been steadfast in that. The only thing that has changed is the number. We have started at 7% for all wells in the beginning, went to 7% on new wells, went to 5% on all wells, now at 5%. On new wells. Those are substantial jumps in a compromise. Those numbers represent hundreds of millions of dollars, about $135 million per percentage point. And so we have compromised a lot. And that's one thing I reminded Speaker McCall yesterday, is that I think you're confusing the word compromise with the word capitulation. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm hopeful that the Senate's latest resolution will help speed along the process, and we can quit tilting at windmills. on the House floor where we are running things up the flagpole that we know, and everybody knew, Republicans and Democrats alike yesterday, that before that vote went up, exactly how it was going to go.
Mm-hmm. And if the GPT is the sticking point to get the votes across the aisle to get something done, then the question is, if in fact a package comes to the floor, what will happen? I mean, we can't continue to have this give and take or change at the last minute. We've got to see some real effort by both sides. And I think, to me, when you look at the basic budget plan that was laid out with the dollars that were in there, I mean, there was the money to accomplish not only what they needed in terms of dealing with the shortfall, but also this idea of having the $3,000 teacher pay raise as well as the $1,000 for state employees. And so, I think everyone is watching with more interest than probably ever before, and we'll just have to see through the weekend, as Representative Williams says, if we really finally get some action.
In fairness, the plan that we voted on yesterday was still $17 million short. And so there would have still been cuts, and it would have left us about $400 to $500 million short going into session in February. So we didn't feel like, and we felt like it was a temporary solution and a very long-term problem. I don't have confidence that the legislature is going to be willing to raise revenue in an election year whenever we go back in February. We want to handle it now, and we want to put everybody and the entire state of Oklahoma on stable footing with realistic expectations.
House Minority Leader Scott Inman is giving up his legislative seat as well as his run for governor in the 2018 election. The announcement comes while Democrats are trying to hold steady on budget talks. Representative Williams, the first question is, what is the mood amongst your colleagues right now?
Oh, I think all of us are heartbroken. We adore Scott. He's been the minority leader for years. He's one of the most articulate, intelligent people that I've ever met. And we're praying for him and Dessa and their little girls. As far as a transition in power, Steve Copeland was elected minority leader back in May. And he was going to take over those reins in an ever-increasing role anyway as Scott continued to run for governor. So transition-wise, we're fine. Steve took over this morning. In fact, we sat down with the executive branch on Thursday morning with Steve and the leadership team to discuss where we go from here. And so it's unfortunate. I think we're all a little bit saddened by it. But that doesn't mean that we don't still have jobs to do.
And Neva, this changes the race for governor. There's now only two major members in the Democratic Party, Drew Edmondson and Connie Johnson, are all you've got left. So do you see any big hitters trying to come in, or do you think this might be it?
Well, anytime you have this major disruption, this major change that was unforeseen, not talked about, happen as it has this week with Scott Inman, then I think there are a lot of folks that may take another look at the race and see if there's an opportunity for them. I mean, clearly, I mean, he's been the leader of the minority party for 7 years. I mean, he's been in the legislature 11 years. He's basically his professional career. I mean, he's really been one of the forces on the Democratic side out there that has, as Representative Williams said, has really helped to drive the agenda and try to move some of the issues that the Democrats have wanted to see to the forefront. But bottom line is, anytime there's a disruption like this, it takes a period of time to begin to kind of see the new set of players on the stage. And even though that was known, kind of what the transition was going to be, it's a more rapid transition now. And we'll just have to see how that plays out in the next session.
Does this put a monkey wrench in the budget negotiations?
Not
throw a monkey wrench in the budget negotiations?
No, not at all. In fact, I laughed when Secretary of Finance Dorflinger was meeting on Thursday morning with the leadership team. I said, you know, everybody said that it was Scott Inman and his run for governor that were locking down these negotiations. Well, actually, that is no longer a part of the equation. And so you get to remove that from the discussion, and we can just focus on doing this. And we'll find out very quickly whether Scott Inman's run for governor had anything to do with the budget negotiations, as I suspect it never did.
Right. Now, another revenue-raising bill from the past legislative session goes down in flames. The state Supreme Court declared unconstitutional a measure which would have increased fees on electric and hybrid vehicles. This was supposed to raise more than $1 million in the next fiscal year. Representative Williams, are you surprised by this?
Not even a little bit. Unfortunately, we have a terrible track record of either reading the Constitution or following it. We have our favorite parts, and then we kind of let the rest of it slide. The good news is it's not a huge fiscal impact. The bad news is it is a cycle. It has almost gotten to be a routine. And we've lost a couple of them actually this week. And then, of course, with the cigarette fee going down earlier, that's put us in the situation. You can't just follow the parts you like and ignore the rest. And we have done that, and we've done it, some of them on 51 vote gimmicks and others where we just said, we don't like that, and we're gonna run it up the flagpole and see how it goes. But it's not shocking at all.
Neva.
Well, I think I would agree on this point that when you say the title of the bill was the motor fuel tax fee, I mean, and you clearly pass it against everything that the Constitution stipulates has to be done, I mean, you've got a problem. So the fact that it was a 6-3 vote in the Supreme Court, I mean, you're right. It's not a huge fiscal impact in terms of, I think it was slightly more than $1 million that was going to be directed to the state highway construction fund or whatever it was. So, but bottom line is, yeah, I think lawmakers have got to increasingly be aware that continuing to pass pieces of legislation, whoever, you know, is pushing it and whatever the agenda is, knowing that there's a strong possibility that the constitutionality of it's going to come into play, doesn't serve the public well at all, nor the legislative bodies.
I can tell you, with regard to that, with these budget negotiations, that issue has come up time and time again, because there has been a, quote, plan B that's been floating around with regard to a bunch of 51 vote measures. And I think the executive branch and a lot of the legislators are aware that the time for experimenting with the Constitution and the code and the courts is over, because if we were to run something like that right now, the injunction would go in place immediately. We wouldn't be able to realize any revenue from it, and these services that people are depending on would still face those cuts. So I'm hopeful that we'd no longer employ that tactic as we go forward.
The state Supreme Court was certainly busy this week as justices declared another measure unconstitutional. The law was designed to cut down on frivolous malpractice lawsuits by requiring plaintiffs to include an affidavit from expert witnesses attesting that the claim has merit. The justices say the law puts an unnecessary and costly barrier to the courts. Neva, your thoughts on this decision?
Well, again, I mean, it's something very similar. This is the third attempt at basically very similar legislation back in 2006, 2013. I mean, so for the third time, the court has clearly said that they don't believe this is constitutional, and for the very reason that you pointed out. I mean, that it's costly, it's meaningless, it's very arbitrary, and certainly does not in the minds of the court. I mean, they believe that this is not a good thing in terms of the discretionary component really usurping the court's freedom. I mean, as I think they use the language. So we'll see what happens in the future. But again, I mean, these types of events that take place where you have something declared unconstitutional does not serve the public well. I mean, granted, the medical association certainly came back, and their argument is that there's a valid case to be made here, that they have to figure out a way to word the language and pass the legislation so that it will meet constitutional muster. And I'm sure they'll continue to move down that road to try to make their case. So I don't think this goes away. I think they continue to try to figure out a way to accomplish what they believe is they're justified into what they're looking forward to having.
Representative Williams.
In the 10 years I've been at the Capitol, I've learned one thing.
Has it been 10 years already?
It has been 10 years.
Time flies.
Yeah. No bad idea is ever dead at the Capitol. It gets resurrected often, and this would be one of those that is a solution looking for a problem to fix. And I would like to say I'm glad that the court struck it down. I don't really mean that. What I mean is I'm hopeful that at some point we can move beyond this and focus on the real challenges that the state of Oklahoma has. And we have some real challenges. We're not topping the list of things you want to top. And we're unfortunately at the bottom of everything that for empirical data shows where we need to be. And if we can get off of some of these issues and get on to establishing a good ground game for a fiscal solution going forward, then get an education, roads and bridges, and everything else that really will have an impact on everyday Oklahomans every day of their
life. And I think the special session somewhat sets the tone for the future and that dialogue, because while every major budget issue is not going to be solved in this special session, and certainly what looms for the next session in February is pretty foreboding, I think, for anyone looking at it as a member or looking at it from the outside trying to judge what's going to happen. But the bottom line is the tone and the rhetoric and the ability to work across the aisle and to have some legitimate compromise where, you know, folks know that this is not where they would like it to be, but where it has to be to move the ball forward. And I think that's the frustration, I think, that much of the public is sensing and expressing. I mean, not just those that feel directly that they may be impacted today or tomorrow by what those cuts would be if something isn't resolved, but the bigger picture of, you know, who are we sending to the legislature, and are they going to be able to just look at the big picture and look at what's best for Oklahoma, not just what's best for them in the next election or what's best for their particular political party.
The Oklahoma Sheriff's Association met last week, and after hearing from U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, announced plans to take on any legislation on corrections reform. Representative Williams, we've talked a lot about corrections reform. Both Neva and Ryan have felt like 780 and 781 were very good to be passed. They support corrections reform. Do you expect a battle from law enforcement in the coming legislative session?
Unfortunately, I do. And there's some misconceptions about the criminal justice reform that has been proffered. Some people think that this is just the governor willy-nilly drew this up and has tried to force it on the legislature, and that's not the case at all. This is a very bipartisan situation. Whenever you have ALEC on one hand and their Right on Crime initiative and the ACLU coming together and all pulling in the same direction, albeit for maybe different reasons, and you get the Pew Institute involved and other stakeholders, and
be the George no mistake, Kaiser Foundation, yeah.
Be no mistake about it. Law enforcement had a seat at the table. The DAC had a seat at the table, and they come up with these solutions, and to come back at the 11th hour and say, well, we're just going to fight all of this. Oklahoma has an incarceration problem. I absolutely disagree with Attorney General Sessions. We don't have a crime problem. We have an incarceration problem. We lead the free world in incarceration right here in Oklahoma. Number one for females, number three for males in the nation. We incarcerate more females per capita than Thailand, and that is nothing to brag about. We've got to get it under control, or our corrections budget is going to outpace our education budget, and that is how a society falls. So I disagree. I do look for some pushback, but I hope that everyone will get educated. My colleagues on both sides of the aisle and both sides of the rotunda, because this is the greatest challenge outside of the budget that faces the state of Oklahoma right now.
Which impacts the budget as well when you have to pay for these inmates. Neva, your thoughts on, we didn't get a chance to talk about Jeff Sessions' speech because he hadn't given it yet last week.
Right.
What did you think about the speech or the Sheriff's Association?
No big surprises. And as we talked about before he came to town, I mean, this is something where he wanted to come. He wanted to use this venue to make the speech that he did. Certainly with, I think it was clear that the Oklahoma Sheriff's Association seems to be organizing and galvanizing for what they're already characterizing as a big fight. And I think even Representative Scott Biggs, who's been one of the big champions of this effort to go out against the criminal justice reforms, has said, look, get ready. We are going to have a big fight. I mean, that's kind of throwing down the gauntlet one more time. And I think what Representative Williams is saying is that there needs to be some tempered discussion. I mean, we forget sometimes, based on who's kind of leading the charge and articulating their point of view, that this didn't happen overnight. This has been a long, ongoing, developing initiative, a set of reforms. It was kind of encompassed as much of that with what happened at the ballot box with 780, 781. Mm-hmm. The voters clearly speaking, and people can now try to parse that and say, were they fooled, or was the agenda clearly outlined, or whatever it happens to be. But there are clear differences here, and law enforcement have some issues. Those issues need to be addressed. I mean, it's not an either-or proposition, I think, in the minds of many. It's being smart about an issue that, as you outlined, the statistics, Representative Williams, is not where we want to be. Not as a state. It's something that's got to be changed. We can't sustain, as Director Albaugh has stated many times from the correctional side, we can't have prisons at capacity and then not decide what we're going to do about it. Either build more prisons or decide we're going to change our direction on who we're going to have in these prisons for extended periods of time. So it's a big issue coming into an election year where you have district attorneys across the state of Oklahoma up for election or reelection, mm-hmm. where you have these lawmakers being put in a position where they're going to have to take, I think, very definitive stands on the issue. It's not going to be something people are going to be able to dodge very easily. It is. It's coming to a point where I think hopefully there can be an intense, aggressive, spirited debate, but that we can come up with some good answers and some good solutions out of all of it.
And the passage of 780 and 781 kind of showed lawmakers and elected officials where the public stands. It was a major election. It was during a presidential election, so it wasn't just a special election that few people show up. Everybody showed up, and it does this point to lawmakers or elected officials where the public is on this issue?
You would hope so, but as Neva suggested, there has been this a kind of undertone that maybe the public didn't know, or maybe the public was fooled. And I don't believe that at all. Actually, I think very much the public understood that we do have an incarceration problem here. And in fact, if you go on the street, it is hard to find somebody who hasn't had a family member or a friend who has been at some point in time a part of the Oklahoma criminal justice system, whether that was a misdemeanor or a felony or whatever. And once you get into that, we have a real problem on how it's funded and how we warehouse and everything else. I think the public actually knew. I'm actually getting a little bit tired of assuming that the public doesn't know something. We've done it on this criminal justice, and we're doing it right now with the budget, because if you look at what the voters also voted on in November, it was a rejection of funding core services with a use tax, a sales tax. But if you look at everything that was proffered on Wednesday in the House of Representatives, it wasn't the income tax. It wasn't a gross reduction tax. It was all use tax based. Mm-hmm. And I think that the legislature needs to start listening to its constituents. The pulse is there. It is even hard to see. These things went directly to a ballot. We have an idea where the public wants us to go, and we need to go there.
Neva and Representative Williams' comments do not necessarily reflect the views of KOSU, its staff, or management.